My question is the following statement. Operating system 4.2 has sloppier architecture than a Tijuana anthill.
Coming to you live from the dining room studios.
Oh, yeah, I like
this. Here's
idea.
Something that is also as sloppy as a Tijuana anthill. This is the Air Raid Podcast, everybody.
Welcome.
This is episode 37.
Woo.
What has now turned into a long and drawn out series. I'm your host, Aaron Roden.
I'm so not a raper.
And we are going to be talking about something very special today. Something very special indeed. We're going to be talking about the Emerald City Comic Con 2011. With some good friends of mine that joined me today and yesterday at the fair exhibiting. I don't even know what to call it because it was absolute craziness. And I'm a little bit drunk and very, very tired. Let's bring him on. Andrew
Stay
Moore
thirsty,
and Will Campbell, my partners in crime for the weekend. How's it going, guys? You tried to say something.
I'm sorry.
I had you on mute.
No, yeah, that's probably for the best.
I know you like to talk, so yeah, I kind of, yeah, whatever. Well, how's it going, guys? Thank you so much for joining me. Good.
It's going well.
Good.
Great couple days.
And, it's been pretty crazy. I mean, we've had a lot of stuff to do, and, I hope that I didn't, boss you guys around too much. So I was kind of, like, sending you off to do things. I even grabbed your wife at one point, Andrew, and, like, made her take pictures for me. I felt pretty important, I gotta say.
Right.
At this thing, yeah, but we had a great time. There were a lot of cool things to see there. And why don't we talk just a little bit quickly about kind of the origins of the Seattle Comic Con? It started in 2003, right, Andrew?
You're kind of apparently.
You're kind of the expert on this, yeah, aren't you? Isn't that supposed to be?
Maybe. I was not going to the Comic-Con in 2003, believe it or not.
But I wasn't either.
I don't know. You might be able to tell me. It looked like it was at the Questfield Exhibition.
Right. It started off at the Questfield, Westfield Plaza. And looks like it, like I'm looking at the thing right now.
This is kind of a small little handful of comic artists.
Right.
Yeah. I do know that Jim Valentino, who did a comic book that I loved growing up called Shadowhawk, was one of the first people
Shadow
there.
Shadowhawk. I remember that one.
It was done by Image Comics.
Yeah. That was one of the first ones that Image put out, wasn't it?
It was in the first run.
It was like that and Savage Dragon.
In fact, I think Eric Larson, who did Savage Dragon,
right,
was one of the first artists.
And actually, I think they had Eric Larson, yeah, right here. They had Eric Larson do their little, like, Emerald City Comic-Con brochure thing. But anyway, so this Comic-Con started back in 2003. And to give kind of, because I know that we have a lot of listeners that aren't really plugged into the whole Comic-Con thing. What this is like it's a big convention for fans of basically pop culture. The Comic-Con has become synonymous with pop culture, like video games, music sometimes at some places, and comic books of course, and movies. If I hadn't said that already. And there were a number of different stars there that we got to meet a couple of them, right, Will?
Yeah, I guess the stars.
Yeah, the stars. And but yeah,
well,
I don't know.
And to give you a an idea of how this has grown. When it first started, it was just comic book artists, and it was very much just a comic book show.
Right, right.
And it was 2007 when they first had what they call media guests, which are people who have appeared in you know, film or TV shows. And it
right.
was, you know, it was Margot Kidder and Peter Mayhew, Peter Mayhew played Chewbacca in the Star Wars films. And
uh-huh. Margot Kidder was Lois Lane in the original Superman
right.
movies.
And then she yeah. went crazy. And yeah. then...
well, can we talk about that one for a second? Because that was the first Comic-Con that I ever went to,
mm-hmm.
was in 07. And I remember passing Margot Kidder's booth and walking by there a number of times because I was like, oh, my God, that's Lois Lane. You know, and she looked so sad because there were nobody was there getting in line to get her autograph or anything like that. And it was...
I mean, yeah, you know,
very sad.
Sorry, I just hit the table. I think it was 2 years after that. It was 2009, and they had the Lois Lane from the Superman television show from the, like, God, the 60s with George Reeves.
Oh, really? Wow.
She was there, and she had a fair amount of people there, but, you know, but it wasn't, I mean, it was, you know, 5 to 10 people in line at any given time, you know, not very much. And I remember she packed up early on Sunday because not many people were,
right, right,
you know, rabid for a Lois Lane autograph.
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah. And I was talking to Jim DeMonacos, the guy that puts this thing on, a little while ago, actually right before the episode that we did, kind of the episode with them when we were... What the hell was that? Oh, we went to this brewing class for beer, you know, brew some beer, and we went out to this bar and we ended up doing like a short episode out at this bar with Jim and Kyle from Kirby Crackle, and Jim was telling me how they kind of like schedule these media guests and how they get these media guests on and what goes into that, and so apparently there's like to get these media guests like William Shatner, who is there. On Saturday at the Emerald City Comic Con, like they have a set amount of money that they have entered into yeah. a contract that they have to make at the Comic Con, right? And if they don't make that set amount of money, then the Comic Con owes them the difference,
mm-hmm.
which is nuts. That's crazy.
So they don't have like a set, like it's like you have to pay me X amount of money to be here, or do they get that in addition to? They expect to make a certain amount of money from autograph sales too.
That's a good question. I can't really remember.
So but. I mean, and this is what I'm about to say is just totally hearsay, but Will Wheaton, who is
right.
kind of the geek advocate, geek folk hero, who was on Star Trek and he was in Stand By Me, and he's now an author and whatnot. One of the first years I went was 08, and he told a story about the pricing list at least at Star Trek conventions.
Okay.
About how, you know, someone like him might get a couple $1,000s for appearing, but the captains would make, you know, upwards of, I hate to throw out a number, but just, you know, tens
yeah,
of
yeah.
thousands
oh, yeah.
of dollars.
Yeah, totally, totally.
Just that was their fee for just appearing. And then
right,
on top
right,
of that,
yeah.
there was the autograph fees and the, you know, the memorabilia. So I'd be interested to know if, you know, they get a set
right, right.
amount of money. And then on top of that, they expect to, you know, they're guaranteed that enough people are going to be there.
Right, yeah.
Where they will,
you know, I bet that's it, too. And I'll end up asking Jim about that, but I don't know if he wants us to talk about it. But
right, and yeah, I know.
But, yeah, it's just crazy to me. And he was telling me about one person in particular a couple years ago that it was one of the media guests that didn't make that set amount. And
I'd be interested,
you know,
to know who that was.
I'll tell you off air. Yeah, I'll tell you off air. You'll think it's pretty funny. But apparently she was a total... Or this person was a total bitch.
Ooh, the plot thickens. Okay,
how so we could talk about that
2 years ago. I'm trying to think of everybody who was there 2 years ago.
I don't think, well,
was it 2 years
ago? I don't know when it was. So, let's kind of talk a little bit about like our expectations going into this, because this was the first time any of us have done anything like in a press realm, right?
Hey,
and for myself, a Comic-Con realm.
Okay, this is the first time you've been to a Comic-Con. Yeah, yeah. Second time.
Need I remind you that we were both writers on the North Kitsap High School newspaper?
That is true.
Don't tell me
I didn't want to bring that up and make people feel bad.
Right.
You know, but.
You got mass experience.
Right. What were you guys expecting when I asked you to do this?
I was expecting to get in for free.
That's about it.
I honestly didn't know exactly what you were expecting to do. And so I kind of got the impression from talking to you that as far as the comic realm went, I probably had a finger on the pulse of that, probably a little more than you did.
Right.
So
yeah.
That's where I focused a lot of my time, was with the comic, the actual, like, the writers and the artists and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what I expected. I mean, it was really cool to, on that first day when you gave me my press pass, and I just walked past everybody into the... ahead of everybody before the doors open.
That felt amazing.
Yeah, I'm just like, whatever, dudes. Yeah.
I will say that right now. That felt absolutely awesome.
And you know, today, are we talking about Saturday?
No, we're not talking about Saturday yet. We're still talking about Thursday. Yeah. We're actually, okay, for all of you out there listening to this it is Saturday night, and we're doing a two-part episode. So the next, this is part one, and we're going to be talking about things that happen. No, that's okay, man. This is podcast. This is fake radio. It doesn't have to be solid here. This is part one. And we'll be talking about things that kind of happened on Friday during the Comic-Con. And you can go and check out all the pictures that we took at the Comic-Con on our Facebook page. And I would urge you to do that, because Will and Andrew and Andrew's wife took some amazing pictures of everything that we kind of did there and people that we saw. So you guys should go and check that out. There's also some just amazing pictures of costumes that we saw today, being Saturday. for all of you keeping notes out there. But what were your impressions, Will? What did you expect to get out of this this press thing here?
Well, the Emerald City Comic-Con had always been
Emerald kind of Silly. Was silly. That a Freudian slip there, buddy?
Maybe. It was always an event that was on my peripheral. Living over in Ellensburg, it doesn't always give me the easiest access to such events.
But right.
I always felt like I wanted to go, and just needed the opportunity to arise. And when you invited me, I was like, "Oh, that's great. That's definitely something I want to do." And having the press pass element was something I've never experienced before either. So the impression that I got from it right away was it was overwhelming. It took a little time to adjust for me, because just people's convictions and passions just openly displayed like that. Mm-hmm. It was very, maybe because it's not usual, you know, in everyday settings. So just having people come out and say, "This is, I really love this. I'm really into this." It was really powerful to see that. And it's easy to fall into that, like, whoa, they're kind of freaky or whatever.
Big time. Totally.
And that was my reaction right off the bat. I was like, wow, that guy's intense, you know, whatever. but as I acclimated to the situation and the environment there, it was like very welcoming. Everyone was really enthusiastic really embraced it all. And I felt myself very comfortable and just walking around and enjoying the whole process.
Yeah. It was just a ton of fun. And I mean, back to that whole thing about how we got to, like, the press got to, like, go into the show early, first of all, on Friday.
That was so much better. Yeah, that was in.
And I mean, people were piling up to get into this thing. I mean, there was what would you guys say? Like maybe 600 people that were there on Friday.
I would say way more than that. I mean,
you think so?
I would agree.
About 600 when we first got there.
Right, when we first got there, and everybody's kind of corralled around the entrance and stuff. And you get to, being the press, you get to go around. First of all, you get your own separate entrance into the whole thing with your own separate bathrooms.
Yeah.
And which was really cool.
Well, even before that, it was like just walking in the door.
Stay in line.
The attendants in the beginning barely even acknowledged you because you did have the press pass. So you're just glancing by them.
Yeah.
And then you got your own little entrance way.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was.
And then you're just kind of walking past everybody. And I even noticed it like when we were on the escalators, like going up, you know, from the lobby up to, I think we were on what? The convention was on like the fourth floor or something of the Seattle Convention Center or Washington State Convention Center. Sorry. And just like kind of going up the escalator and noticing people like look at your press badge and notice them trying to figure out who you were with. Like, you know, just felt – it made me feel very important. Can I just say that?
Yeah.
And I want to do more of that.
Well, I would recommend to you maybe making a press pass for yourself that's a little bit bigger in the business card too. So
you
could see who you were.
So that's a great point, sir. That is a great point.
That just came into my mind.
But yeah, it was really cool to just kind of get in there early and just kind of like Friday we kind of used it to just kind of with the exception of Andrew, because Andrew went balls to the wall and just got interview after interview here. But Will and I were a little bit overwhelmed, I think, and just kind of went around on Friday and got the lay of the land. We ended up talking to a couple that used to work as animators on the series Metalocalypse, which I believe is on Adult Swim. And we'll be airing that interview a little bit later. But yeah, not too many. We didn't talk to too many people on Friday. And I think, which was kind of a good thing.
Well, it was good for me. That, like you said, that first hour is wonderful because
I
just got to digest so much more before anyone got there. It was valuable to me to kind of get an understanding what was going on and who was there.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And then going down, like they had this big, like you take these escalators down into basically like this big room where all the media guests were. And they had like, it was kind of surreal. 'Cause there's like these big corrals that go down in aisles, you know, where people just line up just to get pictures and oh man, that pizza is coming
back
on.
And so my wife and I,
you guys are big
to
on
give
that.
To give us to you know we this is what we do for our anniversary every year is we go to Comic-Con and it's like really the one time where we bleed money, you know.
And it's easy, it's so
really,
easy
you know
to do
we
there.
Don't really
yeah.
Now that we have a kid and we're both in school, we don't do we don't go out a whole lot. It's very rare. And this is the one time a year where we just say, you know, to hell with all that and just go for it. And so when we showed up, we went down to where the media guests were because, you know, we had some agendas, as far as some autographs we wanted to get and stuff.
Right.
So we were down there kind of hanging out. Waiting for Will Wheaton to come out, and as he arrived and he started getting all his books out, and then Jonathan Frakes and Brent Spiner arrived, and they were on Star Trek: The Next Generation with Will Wheaton.
Right, Jonathan Frakes. Let's explain that. Jonathan
Frakes was Commander Will Riker.
Right. Everybody remembers him, the very handsome, very
dashing
first, man with a beard.
Like maybe 1.5 seasons, and then. And then Brent Spiner was
Data. Yep.
And so, you know, and they were on Star Trek. They were on TNG, as they call it, with TNG, The Next Generation.
With
Will Wheaton,
sense, yeah.
And he was Wesley Crusher. And there was this great kind of moment between the three of them where they
high-fived.
They actually hugged and they like gave each other kisses on the cheeks and stuff. And
oh,
it was
wow.
this
That's
really
cool.
kind of like intimate moment, you know?
Yeah,
where
yeah.
And it felt kind of weird to be sitting there like, I was videoing it.
Oh, you videotaped
it? So, you know, and like, and I was just, you know, because I just had the video going just because to kind of take it all in. And then,
right, right.
You know, and then Felicia Day shows up, who is on the web series The Guild.
Oh, that's what that is. Okay, yeah. I couldn't figure it out. I just know what that
and
was.
And then
yeah.
Will Wheaton also appears on The Guild. And then she was also in the later seasons of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and she's got this new show on Sci-Fi coming up. And so her and Will Wheaton know each other, and so when she shows up, you know, they have this moment. And it's kind of interesting to see these famous people seeing their friends.
Right, right.
And,
yeah,
it's a close knit group.
Yeah, and so
it's kind of like that section in Us magazine where it says they're just like us.
Yep. And so and then you know when Jonathan Frakes,
I'm really trying here,
having a blast. He was walking up and down the aisles.
Oh, dude, he was super lively too. Didn't he like? Because he when he first came out, also like we were down there. And he like stood up and he was like, "Is everybody excited to be a Comic-Con?"
Yeah, well, see, he was and then Bruce Boxleitner walked in from Tron, and
right, right.
Like, yeah, it's Bruce Boxleitner, and yeah, you know, and he was just very, very gregarious and having so much fun, and Brent Spiner was walking around talking to people, and so it was really neat to be there before the massive crowds came up, so, you know, before they could. You know, while they could still afford to do that.
Right, right.
You know,
yeah.
They have to be pretty guarded once all the people show up.
Well, and it's kind of weird, too, because, like, I mean, everybody kind of lines up, and then it turns into this big, just, like, signing fest. It's mm-hmm. just like, oh, hi, you know, and then maybe they print your name on something or something like that, you know, like, to, right. from, whatever.
Well, and there's an interesting
it's
thing
like a
that
quick,
happens.
It's a quick transaction, really, you know.
There's an interesting thing that happens, especially with the advent of Twitter and blogging, is that people have the ability to feel a lot closer to those people now.
Right, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Will Wheaton is very popular, and these people feel like they're his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how it was with his Q&A this year, but when people ask him questions, they... You know, they're like, "Oh, you remember me? I commented on your blog."
Oh, I'm sure that happened.
You know,
I left
right this,
before.
It's this
yeah.
interesting thing that happens. And so they're in this weird position where, I mean, and I'm sure I know all celebrities feel that way, but I think I think it's amplified now with Twitter where anybody, you know, depending on how open the celebrity is on their Twitter or their blog, you know, people have the ability to know a lot more about them.
Right, right.
And so it's an interesting phenomenon to watch these people interact with the celebrities because it's such a big moment for them, but for the celebrity
they're working.
Yeah.
Basically, this is their job. Like, this is part of their job.
And,
really.
You know, when we met Frakes and Spiner, or even a couple years ago, Battlestar Galactica people, I just wanted to be, you know, like, I love your show. You're like, you have no idea what, you know, this show means to me, but they don't care. I mean, they do.
Right, right.
But they hear it all the time.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like, how is my experience any different from, you know, the thousands of other people that they meet?
Right, right.
Well, yeah. In that statement, too, it's like, you don't know what that means to me. And they're like, yeah, I don't.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Exactly, exactly.
I don't, so move along.
Yeah.
I appreciate you like the show.
Yeah. Your 20 seconds are up, sir.
Yeah. I think that is the because I think about that, my connection to certain shows, and it's like... It would be hard to translate those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a definite passion or love for it, and it's like it's beyond words or beyond, you know, communicating to someone.
Right.
Know? It's
right.
like, and then you would meet that person. I wouldn't know what to say to them
in regards to that. Do you guys think it's a little bit different too? For like, you know, we're talking about Comic-Con. There's some pretty antisocial people that come to these things mm-hmm. that are into comic books and into, you know, kind of the quote-unquote nerdy side of of pop culture, you know? And, you know, it's no secret. You know, everybody kind of knows that. I prefer
Dork.
Dork? Yeah.
You know, I have a Venn diagram that
I
need to send you because it explains the difference between dork, geek, nerd, and dweeb.
Oh, that's great, because I have my own theory, too. I'd like to hear that.
And it combines...
Because we've always used dork like to explain our D&D
dork,
stuff.
Dork was... So you have like passion, social ineptitude, and intelligence or something a lot. Like those are the three...
Right.
The three things.
Yeah.
And then it's like ineptitude and... I'm going to mess it up, but passion and intelligence is geek.
Okay.
And then dork and I can't remember what dork. I think dork is in passion and social ineptitude. Mm. And then dweeb was intelligence and social ineptitude.
Uh-huh,
and then nerd was like everything.
Hmm. Everything else
like, was all three or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, it's not like the be all end all.
But it's a theory, and that's kind of what I had a theory of that too, where it was like dork was always grounded in a sci-fi fantasy. Someone that was a geek was into technology, and a nerd was grounded in academics. And there was plenty of crossover. In that, mm-hmm. in those, you could be a dork and a nerd.
Right.
Like that. So. I don't
know. Okay, here we are.
My wife was talking about
obsessive.
How it, you know, and I think we talked about that this morning at breakfast. Is that it's one of those few places that really all are welcome.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's where I was kind of going with that
there
too.
Is
like,
some, there yeah. are some, just you know, some people that you know, it kind of takes it takes you aback by just how socially awkward they are, but it's kind of beautiful that it doesn't matter there if they are because they get to just let out all their passion and it's this kind of really vulnerable thing. And it's then you got people who, you know, who I've seen in the, like the hardcore punk scene,
right.
You know, walking around who I would maybe deem as cool, you know,
right,
maybe
right.
they aren't, who knows, you know? But you know, it's, you know, really,
it's where, well, it's,
can,
it's
anybody
like,
can go there because they're sharing this passion.
Right, you know? Right. And even the people that are just going there just to kind of take it in,
mm-hmm.
like, because, you know, there's a part of me that's why I like going to cons, because I just want to take in that just craziness. Like, it really is. It's just craziness that's going on all around you. Like, people in costumes that are walking around, you know, you're seeing, like TV and movie stars that are, you know, sometimes walking around the cons because they're fans of stuff too. But most of the time they're just sitting there at some of these booths and they're just chatting it up with people,
mm-hmm.
like, and having a great time too. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. I just had a blast at this thing this year and got to talk to some really cool people. Had a lot of really cool experiences, and let's get to one of our first interviews here. And Andrew, you talked to a guy by the name of Corey Lewis. Why don't you set this up for us? This is
Corey Lewis,
a friend of yours, right?
Him and I met each other because of a band I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
and he was a person who came to a lot of shows and was always had that kind of artistic edge to him, kind of really influenced by the Japanese style animation. And you know, he didn't go to school for art.
Uh-huh.
You know, he doesn't have like what we call the formal art training, but
he always just knew that
he was going to be able to do something with it.
Right.
And
right.
so, I mean, we talk about a lot of, you know, a lot about what he does in the interview, you know, in the interview, but he's got about four or five titles that he does on his own. There's a couple, he has a couple publishers, but you know, he's got one that's about these seedless grapes from outer space. and then he's got one about it's called Shark Knife. He's got one called Peng, which is about dodgeball. You know, it's,
wow.
He's got a new one called Layered Jacket, which is basically about a guy who can pull anything he needs out of his jacket at any given time.
That sounds like the best superpower to
and
have.
And so, and he's really a very kind of hyper guy, really fun to be around. And he's also done freelance work for Capcom. He recently last year did a one shot X-Men comic.
Oh, cool.
And he's
for Marvel
for
or
Marvel.
Was that? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Nice.
And so he's kind of, it seems like he's on the up and up, and I really hope that it works out for him because he's really creative.
And just good people.
Oh, totally good. Yeah. Totally good people. I awesome. Can't say enough good things about it.
All right. Let's check out this interview. And when we come back, I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about Will Wheaton, because before we came to the Comic-Con, I really knew nothing about this guy. And I knew that he has always been kind of at the forefront of, I don't know what, we don't have the Venn diagram in front
geekdom.
Of us. Geekdom. Okay. We'll go with geekdom. So this is Andrew Moore's wonderful interview with Corey Lewis, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Precisely, Sam. Good guy. I got to write him with an accent. What is it? Western Texas accent.
Yeah,
that was
something
fun.
Like that.
That was fun.
Cool. So this is your what? How many years have you been at Comic-Con?
This one, the Emerald City.
Yeah.
This is like my fourth or fifth one or something. I think I came to the very first one, but I wasn't exhibiting or anything. Mm-hmm. But this one is probably for exhibiting. It's probably my third one for exhibiting.
Okay.
And it's great. It's been awesome to see it evolve. It started at like the fucking Quest Center downtown, the football field. So it's been cool to see it progress into like this huge thing.
Right. With William Shatner and
yeah.
whatnot.
We got the Shat Attack up in here. Will Wheaton. You know, he's always at these things though.
Yeah.
We love him.
So let's see. What's the newest thing?
That would be Layered Jacket number 2. Layered Jacket is my comic about a guy who can pull anything he imagines out of his magical jacket. And the first one I made last year for last year's Emerald City Comic Convention 2010. And this year I followed it up with Layered Jacket 2. It's pretty cool actually. I dig it. It's got some pink pages on the inside, some random mini comics I made. Yeah, it's got Carl Sagan in it. Straight up, he's a character. They kind of talk about like the universe and cosmos and how we're all star stuff and we all are one and all that. So, very interesting. interesting. Yeah, that's my self-published thing, Layer Jacket, pretty much. Totally.
And what is the comic with the Kane Hodder t-shirt in it?
That's Shark Knife. That's my very first comic ever. And actually, I consider Simona, your guys' song, I forgot the full name, Simona Checks Betty's Corpse. Is that it?
You got it.
Yes, that is it. That is like the unofficial Shark Knife theme song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, maybe not like so much lyrically, but definitely like the sound and the energy of the song. I love it. I listen to it a lot. Actually, that was my first graphic novel ever. The first one came out in 2005, so it's been a while. And the second one I've been working on kind of ever since, while I'm working on all these other projects. It's been like my grand comics kind of school of hard knocks, ultimate college experience, I guess you could say, learning experience. And yeah, that one, there's still the same character in it. He still has got the shirt and everything. And I want to make an animated trailer and use that song eventually.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Hope that's cool.
Yeah, well, we're not doing much these days.
Right. I figure it's kind of a post-mortem endorsement or whatever.
And now we own that song again.
Do
so
you?
For a while, we didn't own that EP, but now we do again.
Really? That's interesting. Interesting. Cool.
So,
nice.
This is a weird interview, but the record label dissolved and they gave us everything back.
Very interesting.
So, how many issues of Seedless are there?
This is just this one.
Okay.
The one book. Yeah, it collects. It's an online comic, actually.
Okay.
So you can read it. You can actually read it all online. Hey, what's up? You can read it all on seedlesscomic.com.
Okay.
But this is the collected edition of the first whole story arc. And now I'm on the second story arc. And once that one's done, it'll be in the second book, too. So, yeah. You can read it all for free, but there's also bonus content and stuff in the book. Like, there's character bios and, like, a map, a world map and shit. So, yeah. Some interesting stuff.
And so can you give the rundown about what Seedless is real quick for
sure.
Those who don't know?
Sure. Seedless is basically about like these alien grapes from another planet. They're actually living sentient grapes with arms and legs, but they're totally grapes. And they come to Earth and they befriend an Earth girl named Harmony. What's up, Doug? Okay, cool. All right. They go befriend an Earth girl from Earth. And they kind of just get
That's
into some
weird.
Adventures. Yeah. And there's an evil grape. Who shows up to, and he's looking to collect seeds for some unknown reason. He wants to take over the world or something like that. He's kind of just a bad guy. And yeah, so it goes from there pretty much. And it ends on a cliffhanger, like, what's going to happen next? And the next arc of the Seedless Grapes takes place on their planet, so you can see a little bit more about their history and stuff like that. So yeah, it's kind of just a lighthearted, kind of a kids-oriented comic, but it's also got a lot of funny jokes that adults, I think, appreciate and stuff, too. It also appeals to kind of gaming culture, because there's a lot of video game references and stuff like that in the comic. So yeah, that's pretty much Seedless. It's my fun, happy, poppy comic.
Okay, okay.
Totally.
So you do a total of 4 books?
Pretty much. I have even more projects, actually, besides just these ones that are on display. Because that's, like, my greatest weakness and my greatest strength. It's, like, I'm so ADD with my projects. I'm like, oh, I want to draw something about kickball. I want to draw something about grapes. I want to draw something about shark warriors who defend restaurants, you know? I can't keep my head straight a lot of the time. That's also why the sequel for Shark Knife has taken so long.
Right.
But, you know, I dig it. I'm starting to learn how to manage my different projects a lot better these days. So, yeah. It's fun.
And so, again, you've done stuff for Marvel and Capcom, and so how does that work? How do people approach you for that?
I just meet people like Oni Press and Image and all those guys. They have connections to different people, you know. So, yeah, Capcom, a lot of those guys. Oh, my God, I just saw a friend of mine showed me. Are you guys coming back?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, cool. A friend of mine showed me, I have a Street Fighter illustration I made for a tribute book, and Capcom themselves used it in an official, like, history of Capcom, a history of Street Fighter, like, book. It's in there, like, right next to the table of contents.
And who was it of?
It's actually a group shot of many of the Street Fighter characters, yeah.
Wow.
It's actually amazing to me that they did that, because that's, like, why I made that drawing. It's to appeal to, like, fans of Street Fighter, and there's a lot of characters in the picture, and, like, they used it for this official thing. I'm really excited about that. It's cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the X-Men thing, how did that come about?
Just an editor at Marvel really likes my work and pretty much just hit me up. That was pretty much just an ideal situation. It's like, hey, I like your work. Want to draw stuff for Marvel? Of course I do.
And, I mean, is that... gonna lead to stuff. Hopefully.
Hopefully. The original editor who contracted me for that is no longer at Marvel. He works for WWE now. He's still like cool with Marvel and everything. He's a great guy. But let's see here. All right. But let's see. Oh, there's a new editor. My new editor at Marvel. He also really likes my stuff just as much as Aubrey did. But he's a really busy guy, and I'm also working on my own stuff, so I haven't really followed up on working for Marvel. But I still talk to him pretty often, and I fully plan on doing more stuff for Marvel at some point, for sure.
Good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a huge X-Men fan, so I'm gonna check that out.
Dude,
I would
love to draw some X-Men. I don't know if I'm like ready for that yet. I think I could draw some badass X-Men shit, but I'm actually been working on kind of a power pack pitch.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Power pack is like deep Marvel.
Yeah, that's just deep Marvel lore right there.
Yeah. So, Corey Lewis and I have known each other for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, something.
Yeah, probably like 10 years.
And
known of each other.
So, I mean, I know a little bit of your artist history, but you know, like, what is, you know, what was the stuff growing up that gave you that planted the seed, so to speak?
The seedless. The planted the seedless.
Right.
Marvel Comics, obviously. I was really into Iron Man and like Spider-Man were my favorites growing up. And manga, Japanese comics, really. When I discovered that, that really got me passionate about drawing. I'd always liked drawing, but once I saw like Dragon Ball for the first time, my mind was just blown. I was like, whoa, this kind of stuff exists? And like, yeah. Once I saw that, I just couldn't stop drawing. And like, yeah, growing up, like, Bremerton was actually a pretty good place to grow up, like, for this, especially with, like, the music scene and stuff. A lot of my early comics were about, like, you know, going to shows and stuff like that, you know? It's pretty fertile ground for creative stories, yeah, and good people to know and stuff like that. But yeah, basically, like, just love of comics, love of animation, video games, that kind of nerdly stuff. And I'm like, well, I want to do that, and comics is the one thing you can do, like, all by yourself, so, yeah.
And so, do you have, I mean, besides just drawing all the time, do you have any formal training in you know, and I'm just wondering, you know, did you go to school at all, or?
Not really, no. No, I had like an animation class in high school, that was fun. I went to like some college courses, like after school type stuff, but nothing that really taught me like what I do these days. Yeah, pretty much all self-taught.
It's like, I, you know, because I always got to ask, like, you know, did you have ever have voice lessons? Like, no.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
That's awesome.
I just do it over and over again.
Yeah.
And you eventually get good.
Yep. Practice makes perfect.
And you just pick up tricks from your fellow artists and stuff.
Oh, definitely. I never had any formal education, but I definitely get educated by my peers and stuff. You know, like, there's a lot of artists I look up to that I've, like, blatantly, you know, lifted stuff from or whatever.
Yeah, I feel you there.
Sure. I totally understand that saying, you know, these days, a great artist steal or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, if I see something, like, on the cover of Layer Jacket 2, there's these little black puff guys, and they're like, I just drew it, and I was like, I really want these little black puff guys. But if you ever watch Spirited Away, there's these little... They're straight up exactly like those things.
Yeah.
But I don't even care, you know, I just want...
Yeah, but as long as you make it your own, it's...
Exactly. Make it your own and it's all good. Yeah, totally. I mean, there's a difference between straight up plagiarizing and adapting, you know,
And so who, you know, besides all the fantastic Corey Lewis stuff, who should we know about that?
Well, let's see. My buddy Brandon Graham is getting pretty big these days. He's actually right over there at Image. He publishes a bunch of stuff these days through Image. He's got a book called King City, which is quite good. He's a tall dude right over there, so
okay,
you should totally talk to him. Brandon Graham, my other buddy James Stokoe, he does a book called Orc Stain, also through Image, which is quite good. I don't think he's here though, so yeah. And then I'm starting an online comic site called Killer Be Killed. And it's going to be up soon. KillerBeKilled.com. It's me, another guy, Dan Kurizak. He was just here. He just left. And another guy, Daniel Stone. And we all have our own comics. Seedless is going to be on there. And Dan's comic is called Vibe. And Stone's comic is called Grim, which is about like a young Grim Reaper. So
okay.
Yeah. There's a bunch of cool stuff coming up these days.
So Where can we get this stuff?
Like my C-list and all that stuff? Well, comic shops, you know, if you have trouble locating them, there's always 1-800 comic book shop, whatever. Or the master list online. You can Google that shit. Or there's also my website, ray.com, R-E-Y-Y-Y.com. Amazon carries a lot of my books with actual spines. You can get Seedless or Shark Knife there. Although, interesting little story. Shark Knife, if you check it out on Amazon, it's listed as like over $100. It's like $150 or something. It's out of print now. So
wow.
Yeah, if you want a copy of Shark Knife, you gotta pay. But it will be reprinted when the second book is out. So
okay.
So
and that's sometime soon.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Within this year. It's gotta be within this year. If it's not, I'll be so sad. The world will end in 2012.
Right.
That
well,
come out. Or it'll come out in 2012, and that's why the world ends.
Either way, we're fucked.
Yes, we are.
Awesome.
Death by Shark Knife. Death by Shark Knife.
Right.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrew.
That was fun.
Back from that excellent interview done by Mr. Andrew Moore, Mr. Corey Lewis. Sorry about that. And you had to actually do that in two parts because he was signing autographs at the same time.
He had some people wanting to buy some stuff, and I didn't want to. They were They were kind of doing that hurried up look. So.
Wait, the people trying to buy things?
Well, no,
they
were standing there and they were looking at their money and then looking at his stuff and then looking at us and, you know, I can take a hint.
Yeah, totally, yeah. I'll stand by here for a second while you make this transaction.
Money talks.
Totally, yeah. I did feel a little bit weird about that sometimes, like when we were talking to people and then, you know, other people would be like, I want to take a picture. There was a lot of that going on. Like, I want to take a picture of this person. Could you please get out of the way?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But,
yeah, I felt like that most of the time.
Yeah. Pretty much you're always in somebody's way.
Or I was trying to take a picture. I was like, will this person get out of my way?
And it was usually me, right? I was usually the person in the way. I wanted to make a quick comment. Like, it sounds like Corey is doing some kind of like, some pretty cool books right now.
Yeah. It's
like the one about the jacket that you can pull anything out of and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely influenced by the superhero kind of vibe. But
Right.
It's obviously a lot different. It's more... It's almost... I mean, I want to say it's more geeky, you know? The characters are more... geeky characters in his book Shark Knife, you know, they talk a lot about video games and music and whatnot. So it's not it's almost you know, like comic books have become aware of
the rest of the world,
you know?
Totally.
And so it's like or meta or whatever they call it.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, totally. Well, and I think that's like kind of a common misconception too. From most people. I mean, when you say comic book to most people, I think a lot of people want to think of like their first thought is like X-Men or Spider-Man or the Hulk. Like comic books now are like are very, very, very well done. Like the artwork is a lot of times just absolutely amazing. And a lot of time is spent on doing the artwork for these things. And now there's more different books out there, too, that are just doing really weird stuff.
Well, they're very niche. I mean, they have their own genre and their own little focus. And I'm always fascinated with the idea of something that Joseph Campbell, who wrote Power of Myth, was talking about, was that we have come to this point in our evolution as humans in how we define ourselves in recreating those myths.
Mm-hmm.
And I think looking at the Comic-Con, that is totally what's going on. Everyone's recreating this narrative of who we are. It's really fascinating to see that.
Right, right. And you, Will, you're an artist in your own regard. No, you're an artist. And a really, I think, a very good one, too. And we had a lot of fun just kind of walking through, like, the artist's, what do you call it? Artist row alley. Or artist alley. And just looking at, like, all these posters that these people have done and, like, you know, people selling their art. And there was just, I mean, just so much stuff there. And you bought one guy's that was doing, like, kind of like a play on Red Riding Hood.
Yeah, he's melding two literary genres together.
Right.
Two literary stories together. Right. Little Red Riding Hood and Moby Dick.
And Moby Dick,
which
yeah.
I thought was really, really fascinating.
Oh, and it was so cool. And you have, you bought that poster. And it's like, it's Little Red Riding Hood is basically Ahab on the hood of this ship, or the bow of this ship, you know, like with the big harpoon and stuff. And then like Moby Dick is this huge white whale.
That looks like a big bad wolf at the same time.
Yeah, that looks like a wolf snout. That's just like coming out of the water. And it was done really, really well. It's kind of creepy looking.
Yeah, I was enamored with it.
It is awesome. It's really cool. And do you think Kimber's going to allow you to put that up in your living room?
Maybe not in the living room, but it'll find some place.
It'll find a home. It'll find a home, right.
Second bathroom.
Yeah. Let's move on. I wanted to talk really quick about this guy Will Wheaton that everybody seems to be talking about nowadays. And I didn't really I knew who he was before we came to this thing. I was aware of Will Wheaton. I know that he's very popular on the tweets, on the Twitter. And he's very popular within the comic book convention culture. But I didn't, I didn't know much about him prior to this venture that we embarked on this weekend. He played what was it?
Wesley Crusher
on TGF.
TNG.
TNG.
The Next TGF Generation.
Pirate. Oh, Jesus.
He was in Stand By Me, and he was in that badass movie Toy Soldiers.
Was he really? He was in Toy Soldiers?
I say badass. I mean, I use that term very
with
loosely.
Sean Austin?
Yeah. Oh, Keith Coogan, I think, was in that movie, too.
I don't remember. Wait, who was he in Stand By Me?
Stand By Me. He was the main character.
You don't remember him?
You know, there's the four people on the journey or whatever. He's the main kid.
Corey Feldman.
With River Phoenix, yeah.
And
yeah.
Fat Jerry O'Connell.
And
Yeah, okay. Wow. Yeah, Fat Jerry O'Connell. Who, by the way, plays an awesome, awesome character in Piranha. Have you seen that?
Piranha 3D, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, dude, you gotta see that. I've been preaching.
No, I know. I'm well aware of how good it likely is.
Yeah, it's awesome. Okay, so you know much more about the Wheaton than I think both of us do.
You know, and I only know it because of my wife. So she grew up watching TNG and loved Wesley Crusher. Had a crush on him, so to speak.
Right.
And so it was always kind of...
Should I get a rim shot for that? Does that need a rim shot?
Maybe.
Okay.
it was kind of one of her... I wouldn't say dreams, but, you know, just like she would have, you know, liked to have met Wesley Crusher when she was growing up. And so when he appeared at Comic-Con in 2008.
Slick back, parted hair that was just so.
That's right.
Really
so,
strange jumpsuit that he had.
Yeah. And I remember when she first met him, like in 2008, I think it was. Yeah, it was 2008. And she said, you know, I know a lot of people hated Wesley Crusher, but I loved him. That was the first thing she said to him.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, thank you. But one of his things is that he's chronicled his life as a child star and not only a star of a science fiction show, but a fan of science fiction and fantasy.
Right, right. And a huge fan, too, of, like, everything kind of geek, too, right? Like video games, old video games. He's always been a real big fan of and so, D&D,
you know, he's got all these he's got all these books that just have some great stories. I mean,
could you give me an example of those books? I don't have any.
Well, he's got a book called Memories of the Future, which is he goes back and reviews the first season of Star Trek: The Next Generation from the point of view of
terrible first season
somebody who who lived it and, you know, obviously takes pot shots throughout the way because, I mean, he knows more than anyone how bad it is. And then he's got a book called The Best Days of Our Lives, which is just stories of one of them is his story of when they were filming The Next Generation. Star Trek V was being filmed kind of in the studio across the way.
Right, right.
And so he's got this story about finally getting up the nerve to walk over there and introduce himself to William Shatner. And just Shatner is a total bastard to him. And just how it deflated him. And he walked back to his dressing room and cried. And, you know, he's got all these really great stories from time of his life. And
well, I grabbed your Friday, the first day. I had to grab your wife because me and Will got separated. And Will had the camera. And he was like, Will was basically like my photographer. For this thing, mm-hmm. right? And he took some awesome shots. And you guys can check those out on our Facebook page. See Will's handy dandy camera pictures on there. He took some real good ones. But we got separated at one point, and it's damn near impossible to find.
Was that the first day?
Yeah. That was Friday, and so I wanted to go and see Will Wheaton and possibly try to, you know, corner him. And get an interview with them, which didn't end up happening. But then I ran into you and Alyssa, and I grabbed Alyssa because you guys have the same camera that I do. And I was like, come and take pictures of Will for me at his – because he was doing, like, this reading.
Because Will's not there.
Because Will's
– whoa, paradoxical.
Wait a minute. You're Will Wheaton. I just put two and two together. No,
yeah, that story was about to get really confusing with all the wills being thrown around.
That's true. Yeah, they can't see me pointing at, you know, whatever. But so I grabbed Alyssa and we went to Will Wheaton's book reading, and I sat there while Alyssa like took pictures and stuff, and I got it. I finally got it. Like why he was. Because I didn't really understand why he was still relevant, I guess. And that, you know, that might sound crass or, you know, but I guess what I mean is like relevant in the sense that like people are still fawning over his character in Star Trek. I don't know.
Me, I think he's a perfect example. This is going to sound weird, of somebody who's just so devoted to the nerd geek lifestyle,
right?
But who's
right.
still functional, you know? He's still a functional human being,
he's grown out of that character into mm-hmm. something completely different.
Well, he's totally rebranded himself, what he's done, and he, I mean, not totally rebranded because he still uses
himself to that,
right? He's totally connected to it. I mean, he does, you know, he plays D&D and he talks about that, and
he wrote an entire what do they call it? Like a story for D&D, like a scenario, a game scenario.
Oh, okay.
For
D&D,
a module.
Yeah. Something. He wrote.
Yeah. A dungeon crawl. Or whatever.
Something. He wrote something along those lines.
Right.
You know,
right. Well, and he did that at the Comic-Con today too. It was like he was a
dungeon master or whatever.
Yeah, the DM for this dungeon crawl or whatever it was. Yeah, but I mean, it finally clicked with me. I was like, oh, this is why. Because not only was he super interesting, but he's an amazing writer, too. Mm-hmm. And he speaks to everybody. You know, everybody that goes to a Comic-Con has some sort of, you know, nerd or geek thing in their past that they're there for. You know, it's like either they're a Star Trek fan or they're a comic book fan or they're a fan of like Boondock Saints or, you know, they're a big fan of just seeing people in costume or whatever. But he can connect with all of the people sitting in that audience
because he's into all of it.
Because he's into everything.
You could say he's an ambassador.
He is the geek ambassador.
Yeah.
Well done, sir. Well played. Well played. But during our time yesterday, Will and I had the pleasure of meeting a man by the name of Damon O'Keefe and a woman by the name of Daisy Church, who were animators for Metalocalypse, the first season of Metalocalypse. Daisy just wrapped up working on the animated series for the Ricky Gervais show. And Damon has done some amazing work himself, and we got to talk with them for a little bit and got a great interview. Oh, they also did the animation for Kirby Crackle's video, Zombie Apocalypse, which is a really cool video, and you guys should go and check that out when you get the chance. But let's go into this interview. It was a lot of fun talking with these guys. They were just absolute sweethearts.
Yeah, they were great people. Really great people.
They were so
passionate
nice.
About what they were doing and really approachable. Right. And
super open about it, too. Mm-hmm. Like, they even talk about, like, how they met, like, on the set of, or I guess, would it be a set? Be an
the
office.
Animation room.
Yeah, it'd be more like an office.
Talking
actually.
About their experiences, it was great. Yeah,
and how they really met great. There, and how their relationship got started, and so yeah, let's check that out. And when we come back, we're gonna kind of just wrap things up for part one of the Emerald City Comic Con series here. And well, what the fuck? Here's the interview. Sitting here with Daisy Church and Damon O'Keefe, former artists on Metalocalypse and artists for our friends Kirby Crackle on Zombie Apocalypse, that amazing video that you guys did. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast, Emerald City Comic-Con edition.
Thank you.
So when I met you guys just a little bit ago, you told me a very cool story about how you two met on the
first season of Metalocalypse.
Yeah.
At that point, it was called Death Clock.
Yeah.
They had to rename it because
because of Deathlock, the Marvel Comics character.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So it was like too similar. So legally, they had to change it.
So at that point, nobody could pronounce the name of the show. We're all like Metalocalypse.
Yeah. So we still refer to it as Death Clock.
Yeah. But we were both animators on it, and we became friends. And halfway through season one, we started secretly dating.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Nobody in the studio knew.
Okay, I cleared it with her. I'm stealing.
But
we're taking up space here, so we got to move around a little bit. If you can hear that commotion in the background, we're being kicked out of Comic-Con, basically. So you guys met while working there, and to make a long story relatively short, you guys ended up getting married, right?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. In a metal romance.
Very metal.
It's very brutal and death.
At the premiere party, we had pictures together, and I was showing all my friends, like, this is a guy that I think is really cute. What do you think? But
you did well. You did well.
I think I did a little.
Oh, you're such a sweetheart.
And it was one of those things where when we first started dating, it's all that worries of, oh, you know, office romance. And
we we both work in animation. We both did the same thing.
We're
so it's like,
for jobs.
You know, and, yeah. and animation is very competitive. But it's actually, it's great having an art, like being married to an artist, because it's like we both can give each other feedback, and it, like, we can be critical towards each other without like feeling like, oh my god, I don't want to, you know, step on any toes. And she also understands the work schedule and being in and out of work and
yeah.
going from project to project. And it's,
right,
it's, yeah.
yeah.
So does that ever happen with you guys? So you guys finish like a comic book or finish some work, and then the other person just goes, that is terribly shitty. Does that happen?
We could be more constructive than that.
We definitely all like, if she does a lot of paintings, and I'll like help her as she's working out, like, oh, you should push this, oh, the hand is looking funky, you know, you should just like push the it's kind of tangenting there, and like you want to just push the composition, and she'll do the same to me. You know, it's very constructive criticism. Or I'll say, oh, you know, your stuff is not looking as strong. I think you should push it a little more.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, and it's great because I know that he can give me honest advice and feedback. Like, if I'm yeah. working on a freelance project, it's just another set of eyeballs that yeah. knows animation or knows art that can give you... You know, it's, you're not working yeah, often, in it, you're a bubble by yourself.
Yeah, often, right, right. Often yeah. when you're working on something, you're so locked into it that you don't really see the flaws that it has because you're staring at it so closely that I'll often, like, when I'm working on a scene, especially if we're working at the same studio, I'll just, like, send it to her over the network or whatever, and she can, like, review it and, like, say, oh, the timing isn't working here or something, or push that pose or whatever.
And, right. and it's also an understanding of the industry of the way that broadcast animation is. It's very cyclical, where you'll be on a show for a few months, and then the show will wrap, and you'll be out of work doing freelance. So, you know, we'll be up till like 2 a.m. working on freelance, or one person will be out of work for a while, and we understand that. It's not like we're locked into this 9-to-5 corporate job or...
Right, right, yeah. You know. Well, basically, it sounds like perfect. Almost.
There's
it's never,
cons.
Never perfect, right?
It's feast yeah. or famine. When we're both working crazy.
Yeah.
And when
yeah,
neither
yeah.
of us is working, there's nothing out there.
Right.
So
right.
it's hard not having a spouse to kind of fall back on, like, oh, he has a steady job with the health benefits and this and that. It's like we're both in the creative arts industry, so it's good and it's bad.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did you guys, kind of quickly... How did you guys first get started in this realm of like broadcast animation?
Do you want to go first?
Well, in my case, like I was in school and I really didn't know what I wanted to do, but I've always drawn. I've always loved cartoons. I've like all my life, like in every class, I was always doodling in a sketchbook. I've always loved comic books, always loved cartoons, but I never really quite thought that it was a viable job, even though my dad actually was a painter, but like it just didn't, like I didn't think of it as like, oh, you can do that for a living,
right? Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I went to school and I was actually studying to be like a history teacher, but they had an animation class at the school I was at, and I decided to just take it because I liked animation and like really synced with it. And my good friend was applying to CalArts, and he's like, hey, you should apply, you know, and I'm like, oh, sure, whatever, and I applied, and I got in, and from there, I was nice. Like, I moved from San Francisco to L.A., like, within a month, right. and then I was, like, out, like I stayed in L.A., because that's where animation is, and just have been working relatively consistently since then.
It's crazy to me, because... I mean, you guys are making it sound like it's like, well, one thing wraps and then you just get another job, or it's like
yeah. you're always networking,
right, right.
putting
yeah.
out feelers, and it's a lot about really promoting yourself and
yeah.
letting people know, hey, I'm looking for work. Do you know of any projects? And it's
yeah,
it's really
very
who
much
you
about
know.
Networked, right. and it's very much about like
the right
I mean,
place
it's,
at the right time,
and like you always ask your friends, you know, and you it's I mean like it, starting out it was very hard because the thing about studios is they'll post a job listing on like the internet or whatever, but at that point they probably asked everyone in their studio, hey, do you know anyone? Because
yeah.
that's usually what happens with jobs. It's like they'll go, oh, we need another animator for the project. Do you know anyone who's free? Because you know they'd rather go with someone that you know and you can trust. You know, and I've often like refer each other for jobs.
Either.
Yeah, yeah. And I also feel
that's part of that. It just like it kind of works out with you two quite a bit. Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I feel comfortable with it too because she's talented. You know, it's not like I don't feel like oh I'm just like recommending her because she's my wife. You know,
right, right.
You know, it's like yeah, and especially at work we try to keep it very professional. You know, because I don't want to be like this is my wife.
No making out in the copy room. No, nothing like that. Yeah, yeah.
I'll call him hun by mistake and he'll give me a glare. I'm like, sorry, platonic coworker.
Right, right.
Why I'm married to.
It's not the code. The code. Remember the code. Daisy, you were saying, you were telling me before we started recording a little bit that you were just working on the Ricky Gervais show.
Yes.
Also.
I wrapped on that last month for season 2 on HBO, which is airing now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All the even numbered episodes I animated.
Right. And now is this the show that it's like the show of their podcast or something like that, right?
It's basically the podcast. They recut it together so that it's not like episode 1 in its entirety. They'll take sort of common themes and stitch them together so that the whole episode will have sort of a continuous theme that will tie it together.
Right.
So it's like repurposed bits from different podcasts put together. And it's basically the making fun of Carl Pilkington show at this point. So all the fantasy sequences are just bizarre situations illustrating what Carl is trying to say, which are usually very surreal and strange.
have you guys seen or heard about the new show that they're doing with him where they just like send him off to like...
Yeah.
Just oh my God. No,
why is that guy friends with him? Like... They must pay him well.
He has such dry wit. I mean, I think it's one of those things where he just is unflappable.
Well, know, I looked him up online, and he was a producer for them, so I'm guessing they must have known. They probably either known with him or maybe they worked with him in the past. And, so
just a group of friends.
Yeah, I don't know the entire story of how they met or whatever. But,
but it's a great show because it's hysterical. The design and backgrounds are absolutely stellar. And then the animation, like, they really let us do a lot of fun stuff with the animation. The problem with doing flash animation is that sometimes people want it really ugly and quick and fast and dirty. And so it's nice working on a production where they really want more traditional 2D animation, you know, being applied in flash. Because flash is a really powerful tool. Yeah. You can do very beautiful hand-drawn animation.
You can do whatever you want with it, but it has this like kind of ghetto of being like people hear flash animation and think of bad web stuff. But there are a lot of great shows that are done in flash animation.
And they look beautiful. You know?
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And so my last question here before I let you guys go, because you got things to do here. So what's it feel like to see your finished product on TV?
It always looks better than I remembered. I'm like, wow, did they fix that up? And then I'll look at my original file and I'm like, no, that's what I did.
Huh. Really?
I'm a good animator.
No, it's
it always sounds like something I'd do. Yeah.
It's a thrill. I mean, you know, seeing your name in the credits and the first time I was working over at Warner Brothers, it was like, I'm working at Warner Brothers. The guys who do Justice League are right over there, and I'm having a rubber band fight with them. This is amazing! You know?
Is it just kind of like a everywhere you work, too? Is it kind of like a nerd fest, almost? Like, like-minded people just all working together?
In general, I mean, you know, we like, a lot of the same type of people get into it. A lot of kind of shy, nerdy people get into it.
Right.
You know, a lot of people who like to drink.
Yes. Being an animator and drinking are kind of go hand in hand.
Go hand in hand. Nice.
It's a very grueling job because you'll be working for 6 months, but a lot of times you're pulling long hours. You know, and so it's
and you're always looking for the next job. I mean, you have to be able to deal with a lot of rejection, and it's not a reflection on your talent or anything like that. It's just there's only a certain amount of jobs, and it's being, you know, knowing the right people, being in the right place at the right time, and you just have to sort of put yourself out there and be willing just to be persistent.
Yeah.
And so it's that's sort of the best advice I can give someone to going into the field is that you will have a lot of rejection. You will have a lot of, you know, people that will never email you back or call you back, and it's not a reflection of your worth or your talent, and it's hard to remind yourself of that because as an artist you're kind of neurotic and a little self-critical as it is.
Right,
so you're like, oh no.
There are so many like artists and talented artists that you work with that you're constantly like, oh my God, they're so much more talented than you. But you know,
everybody thinks that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like like one of the character designers on my show. I think he's an amazing artist, and he's always judging himself about some other artists that you know.
So much better than me, and we're like. You know, it's all relative.
Yeah. So what do you guys have coming up next then?
I am relocating to San Francisco to start at a Facebook gaming company called CrowdStar. They're the number two Facebook company that does games. And I'll be coming on board there as an animator and artist for their Facebook stuff. So I'm excited about that because it's a move into the gaming industry for me.
That'd be great.
We both just wrapped
Wrapped on a show on Nickelodeon called Brain Search.
That wrapped literally yesterday.
And it was very interesting because we're working on an actual live-action lot, but we're doing animation for it.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's like kind of both.
They have sound stages across the way.
Yeah. And I'm moving to San Francisco as well. And
I would hope so.
Yeah. Next month's going to be crazy.
Kind of insane.
All right. Well, yeah. Daisy and Damon.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
The double D.
Yeah.
Enjoy the rest of the con.
Yeah, and you guys are here for all 3 days, right?
Yes, we are.
Excellent, excellent. So we're going to be seeing more of you.
Great.
Thank you.
Just walking around in circles.
Gripping interview with Damon O'Keefe and Daisy Church. Two absolute peaches of people. They're like the epitome of great persons on this planet. They're the Statue of Liberty of what humanity should be. I don't even know.
What?
I don't even know anymore.
Well, they were just a great couple.
Yeah, yeah. That really thank you, Will. Take over, please.
Worked in the industry, yes. And they met each other in the industry. It was really just a unique story. It was really just kind of a pleasure to meet them. It was really cool.
The human side to comics, everybody. The human side to animation. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for part one of Comic-Con 2011. We are absolutely exhausted. And so we're going to end this episode right now. Right now. And we'll be back next week with part two of the Emerald City Comic Con AirRaid.net edition. So we will see you guys then. We're going to go out today. What kind of music should we go out with today? Something geeky. Something fitting. You got any? You're a music guy. Andrew, come on.
Yeah, how about something from the Batman soundtrack? Like, some of that Prince soundtrack, you know, like Party Man or 1989 Batman.
Right.
Yeah, the Tim Burton Batman.
Okay, let's see if we can find that online cuz I don't have it.
Right. I have it. I can send it to you.
Oh, booyah. All right.
I have at least two.
What's the song called? Do you know?
Well, there's a couple. I mean, he did the whole soundtrack.
Right. But what's the one? What's the one where
Joker is playing,
Joker is like playing that. And painting like?
Yeah. Oh, that's Party Man.
Is that Party Man?
Yeah.
Party Man. Yeah, we're gonna. That's perfect.
You know, it's funny because there's this thing that happens called the Emerald or the Rain City Mixtape Club.
Uh-huh.
Where people get, there's a theme, and then people make CDs, and then there's a exchange, and one of them was nerdy songs one time, and I did that, and I had the song Howard the Duck from the Howard the Duck movie, and Ninja Turtles theme song.
Nice.
Then the song T-U-R-T-L-E Power from the ending closing credits, and all those tunes.
Oh, man.
Never Ending Story.
That the Ghostbusters,
right.
What was it, Bobby Brown? End Control or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bobby Brown was the... Yeah, he was from Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, that was 2.
Yeah, oh, was that 2?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Take Control, I believe, was the name of the song.
Was it? Because doesn't he say, like I called
the... I guess we're gonna have to take control. Come on, come on, come on. Yeah, that song.
I love that song. Maybe we should play that song.
That's part 2. Yeah, go for that one.
Maybe that should be in part 2.
We just named 10 songs.
That should be actually for part 2.
Yeah.
Should that be for part 2? Yeah. Okay, fuck. Yeah. This is Party Man. And we'll see you guys next week.